everyone. I'm Gary Nall. This is going to be an unusual hour. You're going to have brand new information that you have not seen, read, or heard before from multiple sources. And we have tried to qualify every single source, showing you that almost everything you've been told about how to respond to the COVID virus is wrong. But we're going to go far beyond that. I'm going to do a special commentary today on the nature of fear. Why? Because almost everything in our life today is based upon fear. So John W. Whitehead and Nisha Whitehead of the Rutherford Institute have contributed a really important piece. I'm adding in my commentary on how we can stop playing the government and big media and corporate America's mind games. Reground ourselves. Work together, arm in arm, mind in mind, spirit in spirit. We are more powerful than we believe if we join together. I'll have that commentary. Also today, the 6 feet social distancing rule. What if I told you it was completely made up? There was no science behind it. Who says? The ex-FDA commissioner says. I'll quote him. Also, to the claim that all the vaccines are safe and effective has fallen apart. Who says? Professor Anthony Hall, a real heavyweight. He wrote a letter, an open letter, in Canada to all the physicians and public health interest groups. And I'll read some of it. Also today, Glenn Greenwald. Glenn Greenwald takes on the establishment about the lies around the election time that allowed one person to win and another to lose. You were all played. He unfolds this. Now, he's a Pulitzer Prize-winning top investigative journalist who has now been attacked by the media. Even his former Intercept, he was co-founder of The Intercept, and even they have attacked him. So he left The Intercept. He's on his own. Listen to what he has to say. So we have a lot to share. We begin with the latest on health and healing. According to Pusan National University, which is in South Korea, ginseng, which, by the way, we know is a superfood, has long been used in traditional medicine. The health benefits of ginseng, that's G-I-N-S-E-N-G, are largely attributed to compounds called ginsenosides, which are present in the roots and stems and the leaves of the plant. And these ginsenosides are known to prevent inflammation, diabetes, and even cancer, and can help you control blood cholesterol levels and reduce aging. Now, there are 13 known species of ginseng, but Korean ginseng, which contains the highest number of ginsenosides, is not commonly found in nature. Moreover, of the two types of ginsenosides, the more effective variety, the minor ginsenosides, accounts for only 20% of the total ginsenoside content in ginseng. As a result, the supply of ginsenosides is not very high, and generally it's so low that most other supplements don't have it. So when you get a ginseng, make sure you get the Korean ginseng. So the team of researchers, led by Dr. Ravi Gupta and the Ko Kim University, and also another group at the Pusan National University, embarked on a journey to address. And this was published in Critical Reviews in Food Science Nutrition, and they found huge amounts of data that shows that this Korean ginseng, it really has health benefits. So I won't go into all, I post the article so you can read it for yourself. But you start looking at all the different ginsengs, all of which are good, by the way. But then you go to the red root ginseng, which is a superstar, and the Siberian ginseng, which is also a superstar, then add this ginseng in with it. It helps you. It's adaptogenic, which means it helps your body's immune system adapt to anything that it gets hit with. from the University of São Paulo, which is in Brazil, a study reveals how saline solution, that's a simple salt water solution, can inhibit replication of SARS-2. The use of hypertonic solution of sodium chloride at 1.1% reduced viral replication by 88% in tests involving infected lung cells. This was published in the ACS's Pharmacology and Translational Science Journal. This is important because the study was performed in the laboratory using human epithelial lung cells infected with the virus. And that's where a lot of problems happen in the lung cells. So given the gravity of the pandemic, we believe that this research is important. And this is something that is inexpensive, a dollar, easy to administer. Any nurse can do it and should be immediately given. So just, it's the right concentration. And they found that 1.1% solution was sufficient to achieve an 80% inhibition. The Vero cells are derived from kidney epithelial cells extracted. So, anyhow, it's just one more piece of the puzzle, a positive information that can help. And by the way, there was an earlier study published in the Journal of Physical Chemistry Letters that showed something similar. So, you want to get the virus in treatment early, and that's the key. Now, from the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center, there's been a link shown between inflammation and pancreatic cancer development. New discovery by the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center has clarified the long-established connection between inflammation and pancreatic cancer development. And this was published in today's Science. And pancreatic cells display an adaptive response to repeated inflammatory episodes that initially protects against tissue damage but can promote tumor formation in the presence of mutant, what are called CRAS genes. So they found that approximately 95% of all pancreatic cancers supports this adaptive response, leading to selective pressure to maintain the cancer-causing mutation. So that's one more reason why you've got to pay attention to the underlying cause, inflammation. And what is that? Any amount of alcohol, sugar, any meats, refined carbohydrates, stress, toxins in the environment, they all cause inflammation. So that's something that we can engage in and turn off the inflammation. Juices turn off inflammation. Celery juice in particular. I just helped someone who had massive inflammation. I mean massive. Person was dying. Would have been dead. No question about it. And they were taking coffee. That's inflammatory. It's highly anabolic. And they were taking everything, soft drinks, everything you shouldn't do. Got them off all that. That in itself was no easy task because they were also on 5 different drugs, including OxyContin, and got them to start first day, 1 glass of juice, fresh made, celery with lemon. Second day, 2. Third day, 3. Fourth day, 4. Fifth day, 5. Sixth day, 6. Clear up to 13 glasses of fresh juice a day. Turned off all the inflammation. And that's before the supplements were added in. So just remember, celery juice, cucumbers, and watercress with celery juice helps turn off inflammation. Aloe vera, big time, turns off inflammation. That would be the superstar. From Washington University School of Medicine, some really interesting research, but they think it's the first of its information. It's not, but it's important. They're saying a successful way to kill the HIV virus, bee venom. It destroys HIV cells. So this is something that is important for all of us who care about helping people with AIDS. And scientists from the Washington University School of Medicine in St. Louis have found that by poking holes in the protective envelope surrounding HIV and other viruses, what is known as the melittin, M-E-L-I-T-T-I-N, a toxin found in bee venom, kills the human immunodeficiency virus, yet it leaves the body unharmed. This breakthrough could lead to drugs that are immune to HIV resistance, and also the development of an anti-HIV vaginal gel that can prevent the spread. So, that's something. Now, right now, there are 40 million people living with the HIV virus. I would ask the people in this audience, take the time to go to GaryNall.com, go to documentaries, and download and watch The Cost of Denial. The Cost of Denial, which is the most winning documentary in the world this year. Just today. I don't talk about this, but just today we got 3 wins and 2 acceptances. And this was sponsored by the Society for the International Society for Investigative Journalism, Independent Investigative Journalism. And you see people successfully treated, by the way, using propolis as part of it, and just hundreds of items, because I created the protocols, and then 22-member medical team of board-certified physicians, nurse practitioners, et cetera, implemented it. And we have all the medical documentation, and it shows you the 15 years of this being done, 1,200 people with full-blown advanced AIDS, many near death, not a single one died, all recovered, full health, and interesting, 18 of those people completely reversed their HIV positive, HIV negative status. They were so cured after 5 years of official 5 years without cancer and no cancer in the body, you're considered cured. Well, then got the only proven cures. And all this time, that protocol still exists. I help people all the time. I'm helping someone today who has advanced AIDS. So why can't we help these other 40 million people? Because Anthony Fauci and others who control everything on AIDS won't allow that information to get out. But you can get it out. You can share it. We had a gentleman who called the other day. He said, Gary, you know, let's find a way to get more people paying attention to the information you share. I agree. But at the end of the day, I can only do so much. I'm just one person with limited resources. Think of all of the people listening. If you downloaded The Cost of Denial and you started sharing it, because that's not me saying anything in there. That's the scientists, the physicians, the nurses, the patients, the medical records. All that is seen. It's completely transparent. We even did a press conference inviting all the world's press, all of the AIDS organizations, all of the governmental agencies involved. Not a single person showed up. Not one. We had 100 people with full-blown AIDS at the beginning who now were in recovery. Some had been cured. They were not all mine. I invited people from around the United States who were long-term survivors, but they all had something in common. Most had tried AZT. It didn't work. Killed their partners frequently. They tried a natural way, and they were alive and well. And their doctors were there, and their medical records that were there. An independent scientific committee was there. Every way to answer any question, and no one. That couldn't happen by accident. You couldn't have 7,000 invitations to the media and not a single person show up. That's Anthony Fauci behind the scenes. That's the deep state and Big Pharma not wanting its profits and control over a disease that they knew they would make hundreds of billions from to be bothered with. We had the solution. All they had was attacks. And you see those attacks today in Wikipedia. More on Wikipedia, because not today, but my lawsuit has been settled. I can't go into it because of the terms of the settlement, but I'm pleased with the outcome. Much more to come. So I'll discuss that on another day. Anyhow, so now they're saying that bee venom. But of course you have to look at this, because why is it that beekeepers were getting stung and then talking about the health benefits, what they didn't have, like arthritis? Their doctors have been using bee venom for arthritis. So it doesn't hurt the healthy tissue, kills the HIV cell. Also today, and by the way, this study published in the journal Antiviral Therapy came after research from Johns Hopkins Children's Center, the University of Mississippi Medical Center, and the University of Massachusetts Medical School reported that a Mississippi baby with HIV had apparently been cured only after he received antiviral therapy within 30 hours of birth. And so lots to know, but we're not sharing this information. We should. Now, from Al-Marifia University in Saudi Arabia, a vegetable compound shows promise against diabetic kidney disease, and that's very common. And this was from the American Association of Anatomy annual meeting during an experimental biology session. And they talked about diabetic neuropathy, very common. It's a serious microvascular complication of diabetes mellitus and a major cause of end-stage renal disease. And they found that sulforaphane, S-U-L-F-O-R-A-P-H-A-N-E, sulforaphane, which you find in broccoli, broccoli sprouts, and other cruciferous vegetables, that helps with this process. So it helps against diabetic kidney disease. Also from Rutgers Cancer Institute, New Jersey, high calcium, low lactose diet, meaning dairy, get rid of the dairy, can reduce the risk of ovarian cancer in African-American women. So take your calcium and magnesium, but not from dairy, and make sure you're getting up around 800 to 1,000 milligrams, but don't take dairy, and you reduce your risk of ovarian cancer. That's important. That's the latest on health and healing, always from peer-reviewed journals. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to hear from a whistleblower, just to set the stage. She is a longtime practicing nurse. She became so frustrated by what she saw and how her hospital was dealing with it that she finally said that she had no choice. She filmed this, and what you're seeing is her talking about how they're seeing all these vaccine injuries and deaths, and how they have to not report this or cover it up, or if they did report it, no one's going to assign it to the vaccine. They're going to assign it to another condition. And then we have another doctor in a separate video following that to give you independent confirmation it's not an isolated case. He's from a different medical clinic, a different medical doctor. Back in a moment to share the truth.
My name is Jody O'Malley, and I'm a master's prepared registered nurse.
Well, first of all, your hospital is run by HHS, correct?
I work for Health and Human Services with Indian Health Services branch for the Native Americans.
These are federal employees?
Yes.
And we work for the government. So, I mean, the main thing is we have to follow.
I know. I mean, that's another thing. I don't know how much longer I'll be here.
And the protocols. Here.
I know.
Are the policies and administrators coming directly from the federal government?
Yes.
The problem in here is they are not doing the studies. People that had it, you
right.
know, and the people that have been vaccinated, they're not doing any antibody testing.
Now you got this guy in room 4 who got his second dose of vaccine on Tuesday, has been short of breath. Okay, now his BNP is elevated, D-dimer elevated, ALT, all his liver enzymes are elevated, his PT, PTINR is
elevated.
He's
got probably myocarditis.
Yes!
All this is...
Let's see.
Probably myocarditis due to the vaccine.
Right.
But now they're not going to blame the vaccine.
Well, and you know what? But he has an obligation to report that, doesn't he?
Oh,
it
yes.
happened. Right, what is it? 60 days after, if you see anything?
They have got to.
But how many people are reporting?
They are not reporting.
Right.
Because they want to shove it under the...
Yeah.
Under the mat.
In this instance with Dr. Gonzalez... What patient was she referring to, or without saying
she
the name?
She was referring to that patient that had congestive heart failure.
And yeah. in that particular patient's case, it was not reported.
No.
I'm going to have to transfer you to another hospital. Okay. We don't have cardiologists here. And what you're developing is like a congestive heart failure. Mm-hmm. Okay? And that's not good. I don't know where this is coming from. Mm-hmm. On July 29th, you had the first COVID vaccine. Mm-hmm. And August 19th, you had the second. You know, you don't have COVID. Okay? But you have got a lot of symptoms, you know. And you're developing congestive heart failure.
Were there other instances that they didn't report?
Oh, I've seen dozens of people come in with an adverse reaction.
Was one of the ones you saw a 15-year-old with blood clots?
Yeah, so I was just covering a nurse. He's in here with bilateral PEs, but he's fine. And I'm like, okay. So he wasn't on oxygen or anything like that. And I said, was he vaccinated? And then she's like, I don't know. So then I looked in the chart, and he was. He had the Pfizer vaccine at the end of July, and he was due for his second dose. So this is essentially 2 to 3 weeks later. Most likely cause of hypoxia, unusual PE at this age. Unclear etiology. They don't know why he got it.
So how do we know that the blood clots, or how do you know that the blood clots are a result of the COVID vaccine?
Because this is a 15-year-old, normal weight, healthy child. No reason for him to have a blood clot.
It's a shame they're not treating people. I know. Like they're supposed to, like they should. And I think they want people to die.
And how many have you seen that have gotten vaccinated here?
Side effects? A lot.
A lot?
Have you seen it too? Yeah.
Yeah. Who's writing the VAERS report?
Nobody, because it takes over a half an hour to write the damn thing.
Why?
The CDC website, it says that you're required to report adverse events following vaccinations. Is there a policy at the hospital for reporting these complications? No.
There has never been any directive sent out on reporting. With this vaccine, we are in stage 3 clinical trials. Normally, stage 3 clinical trials is where you gather your data. What the responsibility on everyone is to gather that data and report it. And if we're not gathering that data and reporting it, then how are we going to say that this is safe and approved for use?
How come after 18 months we haven't had any research? Isn't that fishy to you?
It is super fishy.
It's
not that it hasn't been done. It hasn't been published.
It hasn't probably been done because the government doesn't want to show that the darn vaccine is full of shit.
What does she mean by full of shit?
It's not doing what its purpose was.
And what is Dr. McGee saying in that video?
He's trying to defend the vaccine.
Why would he do that?
Because that's his view on it.
Okay.
His view is get the vaccine, it's science, right? If we all just get it, this will all be over with.
Why are you choosing to blow the whistle? It's not what a lot of people would do. They're scared, they're afraid.
What prompted me to do this was when I was house supervisor one night and one of my coworkers had taken the vaccine and she didn't want to. She had went throughout this entire pandemic working in the intensive care unit, pretty much was a COVID unit.
Yeah, it's really sad. She had just come back from surgery from leave 2 weeks ago, a little over 2 weeks, and then got her first dose of vaccine after surviving this entire pandemic.
She didn't want to take it. She didn't want to take it because of her religious beliefs. And she was coerced into taking it. And it's like, nobody should have to decide between their livelihood, being a part of the team in the hospital, or take the vaccine. Now we're just making people take it, and then there's reactions to it, and then you have a medication that has been shown effective and surely has no adverse reactions for trying it.
Did Dr. Bhagwat talk to you about prescribing ivermectin for
not a lot
at this facility.
And so physicians can't prescribe off-label use medication here?
Not for COVID. They did it with hydroxychloroquine, and it was really bad, and so they are not allowing it right now.
She said, yes, I would agree to write for this because she's not contraindicated. And
Dr. Bhagwa said that?
Yes.
I am stuck. I am told you are absolutely not to use it under any circumstances whatsoever for somebody with COVID unless you don't want to have a job. I am not going to lose my job.
Damn. Before.
They were not allowing, they were going to lose their job if they allowed you to use that drug.
Right. Nuts. Right now, what is plaguing this country is the spirit of fear.
Are you afraid?
It's my career, you know, it's how I'll help people. But am I afraid? I wouldn't necessarily say I'm afraid because my faith lies in God and not man. So I have two older kids.
Okay. The nurse who did not want to get the vaccine, who had been for over a year and a half working in intensive care with primarily COVID patients, took the vaccine, ended up dying. That's why she was choking up there. When they wanted to use ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine, they were not allowed to. Not allowed to. Now, remember, I'm going to get to a piece of the puzzle you're not aware of today. Why? Why, with all the hundreds of studies, the tens of thousands of scientists who participated in the study showing the efficacy and safety and the high percentage of people surviving, not even going to the hospital because they had early intervention, even if they were in the hospital, saving their lives at a high percentage. Why did this happen? Well, it's about a drug. Richard Gale is going to tell you about that in a few moments. But before we go there, I want to follow that up to show you this is not a rare exception. This is not all hospitals. Here's another example, a little clearer audio so you can hear the doctor, medical doctor, regular pro-vaccine, mainstream medical doctor, and what he is saying about what's going on in his hospital. Okay, you just heard what he had to say. This is a mainstream MD scientist, nothing controversial. He actually has charts up. As you go to prn.fm, scroll down, you can see all this, the actual documents. 1,300% more likely to be infected with the virus if you've been vaccinated. That means you have a huge benefit if you've already been infected. So if you've been infected, you have an enormous advantage at the cellular level of withstanding any assault from any of the other SARS viruses or the different off breeds of them, the Delta, and there'll be others. Why aren't they promoting that? Because that's how you actually get to a herd immunity. And there's scientific studies supporting that all over the world. But no one's talking about it because they want to vaccinate everyone. So they're no longer engaged in science. That's politics and economics. You heard him say it. The charts are there. Anyone who does the research can find it. Now we're going to go to a doctor talking about what's going on that you are not aware of. And this is not something you will hear or see anywhere else.
Evidence suggests the vaccines are not nearly as effective as the media and medical establishment predicted. Here's One America's Pearson Sharp.
With a surge in new Delta variant cases around the country, growing evidence suggests the vaccine isn't nearly as effective as the mainstream media and medical establishment insist that it is. One America News visited an urgent care center in Southern California, where doctors say roughly 40% of their new COVID cases are among fully vaccinated patients. One such patient, Brian Conway, was fully vaccinated when he came down with a severe case of the China virus and very nearly died.
So, Brian, you got the vaccine and then you later came down with coronavirus. Tell us about it.
Basically, I got the vaccine in early March. The first shot and the second shot.
Which variety was it?
From Pfizer.
Pfizer vaccine.
Pfizer vaccine from March 1st and March 22nd or 3rd, I was fully vaccinated. About a month ago, on a Thursday, I got a headache, which is very unusual for me to get a headache. And I just felt absolutely horrible. I got tested and turned up positive. Monday morning, I showed up here with Dr. Tyson.
And how severe were your symptoms when you came in here?
I'm 67 years old, and I've never in my life felt that bad.
So you couldn't breathe?
I couldn't breathe at all. I mean, it was very bad. You know, when you lay in bed for 8 days and just absolutely cannot breathe, it was very worrisome.
And so when you came in here and Dr. Tyson prescribed you medicine, how quickly did you recover?
I felt better within 3 days.
So it was a pretty quick turnaround.
Pretty quick, yes.
Do you think that his treatment saved your life?
Absolutely. Absolutely saved my life. Without his treatment, I don't think I would be sitting here.
We spoke with Dr. Brian Tyson, who explained that he's seeing a high number of breakthrough cases just like Conway's, contradicting the CDC's claims that the vaccine is the solution to the pandemic.
So despite cases like Brian's and all the major breakthrough cases that we're seeing, the CDC and other agencies continue to insist that the vaccines are effective and they work. Do you agree with that? What are your thoughts?
If you look at what's going on in Israel, if you look at what's going on in the UK, if you look at even how the CDC had to re-report numbers in Florida and Texas, and even our public health department here, we're seeing a 20 to 40% breakthrough with the vaccines. It's not preventing people from getting sick. It's not preventing the severity of symptoms that we've all been told. Okay, so we all know you can still get coronavirus with this vaccine, and you can still spread coronavirus with this vaccine. I think it's giving people, again, a false sense of security. You know, I'm vaccinated, nothing's going to happen. Even if I get a cold, well, it can't be coronavirus because I got vaccinated. That's the problem.
As a doctor, what have your experiences been with the vaccine so far? How are your patients responding to it?
I've seen a lot of adverse reactions.
More so than you would expect from other vaccines?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. We give the flu shot and other vaccines, and we take care of a lot of the pediatric offices. We never saw anywhere near the number of cases of adverse effects that we've seen here. I mean, I've seen kids with pericarditis. I've seen one kid with myocarditis. I'm seeing Bell's palsy. We're seeing shingles outbreaks. We're seeing neurologic issues. Lots of rheumatoid issues with, you know, achy joints and bones and myalgias.
And you don't think these could be attributed to other things? It seems like it's related to the
vaccine. No, it seems because there's been a direct relationship.
So the question on everyone's mind, is the vaccine safe?
It does not appear to be as safe as they're telling people. So I wouldn't use the term safe or non-safe. I would say, let's look at, is it effective? And clearly it's not effective.
What is your thought on the CDC coming out and saying that the vaccine is perfectly safe and they highly recommend it for pregnant people, not pregnant women, but pregnant people? I mean, are there any long-term studies on the effects this vaccine has on fetuses or on pregnant women?
No. In fact, the study that was shown on pregnant women showed that those who were pregnant and got the vaccine in the first 20 weeks of pregnancy had an 87% chance of miscarriage. Not one healthy child died from coronavirus under the age of 18, but yet we want to subject 4,000 per million, okay? In the state of California, what we got, I think, 12 million kids? Well, you know, 12 times 4, that's 48. That's almost 50,000 kids in the state of California that are going to have a problem, a severe problem from the vaccine, according to Pfizer's own data.
Based on the Delta variant and the vaccines and everything that we're seeing, where do you see the country headed in the next few months? Do you think Americans should be worried?
We should be worried in the sense that 18 months into this, we still have no real answers. 18 months into this, we're still doing the same things, expecting different results.
Seems like they're making things up as they go.
We're making public policies not based on science, but control and what I think is best for you. We have an immune system that has stood the test of time of thousands of years. If there's one thing that I would trust my immune system over anything that the government policies are dishing out. And I would also trust the fact that we have drugs that we use that are FDA approved, not emergency use authorization, but FDA approved, that have been shown to be effective and efficient to treat this virus. And I think that that's where we need to go. We need to learn to live with it. We need to learn to treat it. And we need to learn to go about our business and not give in to the fear.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Vera. I appreciate it a lot.
Okay. But there is more to come. I'm just going to take a very brief break here. And I want to give you some program announcements, and then we'll come back and you can call in and share your thoughts about this, because we're sharing real people in the front lines, doctors, nurses, telling you that what they're seeing is a huge amount of adverse effects not being reported, and people dying, and children with endocarditis, cardiomyelitis, congestive heart failure. And in fact, in one video I saw, the doctor, the pathologist, opened up a brain of a young person. You see all the blood clots, massive blood clots all over the brain. That would never happen. And yet that is now a part of it. And yet they're not sharing any of this information. The fact that the mainstream media refuses to share any of this, to have an open and honest dialogue, should be concerning. But they're not concerned. We are. Today, real quick, first I have a special for you. Here it is. It's a terrific special. You're going to get the Heavenly Aloe. That's one of my top 10 things I make sure I put in my body every day, aloe vera. Delicious tasting, but it is the best of the best of the aloes. Also, I'm putting in here the delicious instant oatmeal. Just had some this morning. What's in it? And you can carry it, take it with you anywhere. It's easy to make. It only takes a couple minutes. Just pour the packet in, some liquid, warm it up. You get 16 vegetables, 18 fruits in this super breakfast. And it is the super breakfast. What's in it that you wouldn't be in a normal person's breakfast? Well, I have the steel-cut oatmeal, oat fiber, coconut oil, brown rice protein, flax seeds powder, almond protein, coconut, banana flakes, green banana, vanilla, blueberries, pomegranates, red, the acai, acerola cherries, apples, bananas, bilberries, blueberries, cherries, cranberries, goji berries, grapes, seed extract, grapefruit and grape seed extract, papaya, let's see, I've got prunes, raspberries, strawberries, watermelon, I have barley grass, apple, parsley, spinach, carrots, pineapple flavor. I have spirulina, radishes, celery, onions, collard greens, kale, asparagus, broccoli, sprouts, and of course, cabbage, broccoli, and cauliflower. Now, it's vegan, it's delicious. It took me a year to perfect because I kept coming back sample batch after sample batch that it was bitter because of the onions. And I said, keep them in. I'll find a way. So I increased the coconut oil and the brown rice protein and the almond protein, and that disguised it. So now you get the benefit. Imagine sitting down to a bowl with 16 vegetables, 18 fruits, delicious tasting, takes a couple minutes to make, and you're getting that today, all right? So, and I've got the seeds, the nuts, the vegetables, the plant-based protein, the whole grains, it's all in there. And you get 12 different servings out of this 1.5 pound bag. You get 12 servings. And then something brand new, a brand new self-empowerment documentary, powerful. This is my life, let me live it. Well, at a time when people are in stress, a time when people need some change, a time when people need to repurpose, a time when you're going to either be forced to do something or you can shift gears and take control of situations in your life, this is what you need to hear. This is a powerful self-empowerment documentary. I filmed it in front of a live audience in New York. This is my life. Let me live it. Now, this would normally cost you for the whole package, including all the wonderful things in the aloe vera. And by the way, this is the highest quality aloe vera of all the different aloes. This is the number one. It's grown organically right in the United States. I used a whole leaf I use the natural Bing cherries, the raspberry and black cherries. Siberian Panax ginseng is in here. The Gota Cola for the women. The wild yam root extract, ginger root, peppermint leaf extract. It's all in here. Okay? So it's the best of the best. It would normally run you $115.47. What are you going to pay today? Just this amount, $69.99. You're saving $45.48. So what do you do? Call 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. Or call Neil in the Vitamin Closet, 646-926-5430. 646-926-5430. Again, this is a phenomenal package. Really health in the higher way of using it. Because there's no breakfast here like that, and there's no aloe vera like this. Call 877-627-5065, and you're saving $45.48. Now, one other thing I want to mention that coming up in about 3 weeks, a little over 3 weeks, it'll be on October 16th, which is a Saturday at noon, I'm going to replay the premiere Last Call for Tomorrow. Subtitle, We're All on the Endangered List. I'll be there live. You'll be watching it. And then I've got two of the world's leading environmental experts on for an hour each, including that wonderful Dr. Kruger from Canada, the tree woman. And I've got a rare interview with one of the people who doesn't do very many interviews, who is one of the leading environmentalists in the world. And he tells the truth. So we're going to have two wonderful people. So it's going to be about 4 hours long. So call this number if you want to get your tickets online. You can call 646-926-5422, or you can call the other number as well. So that'll be the premiere of Last Call for Tomorrow. I'll be there. You can ask questions. There'll be a whole afternoon. It's going to be wonderful. Now, we're going to hear one clip because we got to get this in. What's behind all this? Did you know that no treatment was allowed, no ivermectin, no hydroxychloroquine, even though all the science shows that it is safe and it's effective? And there are hundreds and hundreds of studies on both now, with tens of thousands of scientists participating and patients in this published in peer-reviewed journals. So why didn't a doctor in a hospital say, I'm going to use this? They were told they could only use one drug. And now we're saying, is it possible that one drug was the primary cause of death once in the hospital because no one was allowed to be treated before they got to the hospital? And Anthony Fauci was the person pushing that drug. And now you're going to hear two stories on this. Let's go to those stories right now.
For Conrad, and I'm a physician assistant at a local community hospital. I've been there about 15 years. I'm a hospitalist PA. I take care of the inpatients. So if you're in the emergency room and you have to be admitted to the hospital, you'll see me and I'll take care of you throughout your hospital stay and discharge you when you're ready.
I love my job.
Being in the medical field and knowing how important it is to make sure that we keep patients safe is number one priority. January, February is when we started hearing about the pandemic, and then I remember the day that they closed churches and schools.
The fields are empty, the playgrounds deserted.
And that's when it really hit home for me, and I realized, okay, it's coming. It's coming here, we gotta get ready. I was actually sent into a larger hospital to learn and train how to take care of potentially catastrophic situations. Many of us just had severe anxiety during the pandemic, thinking we were bringing this home to our families. There was a bunch of us that went to learn how to do mass casualty training in case we needed it. So that was a little scary, and that's kind of when it really hit home for me. The vaccine rollout went pretty smooth at our hospital. I've never experienced an emergency use vaccine or an emergency use, really anything in my lifetime. I've been pro-vaccine. I mean, my kids are vaccinated. We rolled them out to pretty much like essential workers and that and all that first. There were many that were excited about it, and I understand we were all looking for a way out. After rolling them out then to the kind of general public, the elderly and in nursing homes in the area, we would get elderly in with COVID. It was kind of interesting. And it was weird. It was almost like a week after they would get their first dose, they would test positive for COVID. And then we started seeing patients coming in, you know, I got my vaccination and a week later they're in with pneumonia. I can say for sure in 2021, this is the year of pneumonia. Independent of COVID, I've never seen people with so many pneumonia, sepsis. And even in the middle of summer, you know, all summer, that's what we would get in the hospitals, pneumonia, pneumonia, pneumonia. After the vaccine rollout, I definitely noticed an uptick in heart attacks, strokes, blood clots, gastrointestinal bleeds, gastrointestinal complaints, appendicitis. We even saw pancreatitis, recurrent cancers. It was noticeably increased, where it wasn't just me noticing it, was everybody seemed to notice it. It became clear to me that there was something wrong. I knew nothing of VAERS, the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System. I didn't know about our responsibility to report. It was never even talked about when these vaccines were rolled out. I mean, you'd hear it in the news here and there, but there was never this push to make sure providers were made aware that if you're getting patients in the hospital with issues, these issues, whatever, that here, you got to go to this website and start reporting and start paying attention to stuff. That was never educated to us at all. And I went on the website, I looked, and the first thing I noticed was that it said healthcare providers are required by law to report certain adverse reactions to VAERS. And I said, what do you mean? Like, what law? So, and then you look further, and it had a whole section on it, exactly what you're supposed to report. Specific things you're supposed to report to VAERS after the COVID vaccine rollout. So that's when I started reporting patients on my own. Well, very quickly that became a full-time job in and of itself. I would say within 3 weeks to a month, I had already had 50 patients reported. And that was just of the providers that were willing to tell me about patients.
The whole interview can be seen on PRN.fm. What she goes on to say is that she had so many adverse events from the vaccines that it took her full time, and then no one else in the hospital wanted her to report on these. And in fact, she could only report on hers, not any of their doctor, nurse, or anyone else's. And she saw a cover-up. They were downplaying the actual adverse effects as if they wanted people to believe there were no adverse effects. She's just one of thousands of people who've witnessed the cover-up. Our final episode today, we're going to play a short clip, is why all this was happening, that no doctor was allowed to use their own medical judgment to get in early and save lives. This is on the head of Anthony Fauci. He's responsible for all of this. Here's what you have to listen to. This is important.
Be a few reports
in February of 2020, a state-run Chinese research institute seeks a patent on the use of remdesivir to treat coronavirus based on the results of a single patient. In April of 2020, Anthony Fauci cited a study which he said proved remdesivir could block coronavirus. He claimed the study showed that remdesivir was safe and efficacious in the use against the Ebola virus in 2018 and 2019. But this was a lie. If one were to actually look at the study, which was testing four different drugs against Ebola virus, they will find that the safety board pulled remdesivir out of the trial 6 months early because over 50% of patients who received it died. Fauci quoted a second study in support of his mandating the use of remdesivir, a study conducted by the makers of remdesivir, wherein 53 patients with COVID were administered the drug for 10 days. 23% of them suffered from multiple organ dysfunction syndrome, septic shock, and acute kidney injury. 8% of them had to be taken off the drug after only 5 days because it was killing them. After the CCP and Fauci recommended the use of remdesivir, the U.S. secured the world's supply and began treating Americans with it. COVID patients immediately began suffering kidney failure, which was then blamed on COVID, even though studies by the manufacturer show that remdesivir causes it in 23% after only a few days. When the kidneys fail, the lungs fill with liquid, which is how thousands have died in the hospitals, being put on ventilators, and it's all being blamed on COVID. But if we read the fine print, we see that this is to be expected with remdesivir. And this has happened before. YouTuber Jamie Deluxe recently compared two patients from the past, Freddie Mercury and Magic Johnson, both diagnosed with HIV around the same time, both advised by none other than Anthony Fauci to take the drug AZT. As Freddie Mercury took heavy doses of the deadly drug, his health quickly deteriorated until he died. Magic Johnson started taking it, but it made him feel worse, and so he stopped. The media storm surrounding Magic Johnson's condition immediately disappeared after he stopped taking AZT and never mentioned it. And Magic Johnson is alive and healthy today. This is how they kill us. They sow fear with mainstream media pop culture lies and kill us with deadly drugs in the hospital.
Now, tomorrow, we're going to have a doctor and a researcher show you the actual studies that this gentleman just referred to so you can see for yourself this man was telling the truth. You see the actual studies. So they had an extremely toxic drug that was killing people in two completely superficial studies. One, that people were only on it for about 10 days. The other was just a matter of months, and they had to discontinue that. And yet the entire medical edifice accepted this. This was what people were getting when they were getting into hospitals. That deserves a congressional investigation, because we can now say that this drug could have been responsible for a high percentage of the actual COVID deaths. And yet drugs that were known to benefit and have been proven were prevented from being used. As you heard in the one clip, a nurse says, well, we can't use any drug. I could lose my license if we use any other drug. They had to use Anthony Fauci's drug. And before, it was AZT, Anthony Fauci's drug. And we estimate around 300,000 people with HIV infection died because of taking it. In any case, that will be part two tomorrow. But now we're going to go to Richard Gale, because he has some research on this drug and the fact that the mainstream media has never done a story showing the truth of this drug, and the mainstream media has lied about the drugs that could save lives, especially if they're given early in combination, a whole series. And all of this is now in the peer-reviewed literature, but the media doesn't seem interested in what actual real science is sharing with us. Richard, could you tell us what your research has found? And also, I just want to let people know a big story that we're holding for tomorrow, because we're looking for independent confirmation that is accurate. A new story that the United States funded, Anthony Fauci and the U.S. Public Health Service funded over 250 studies for the Chinese communist military researchers. We, the taxpayers, paid this for the Chinese military-linked studies for over a decade. And we are confirming that, because some of those studies were gain-of-function research, and he lied before Congress saying that there were no funds for this at all. And now we find this treasure trove of the actual studies. So we're reviewing every one of those studies. We have all 250 studies. We're reviewing them. We'll report on that tomorrow. Richard, tell us quickly about remdesivir.
Very quick. Well, we just heard that clip, and I don't think I need to repeat that. The only other study I'd really mention, because I would have mentioned those studies that we just heard, but there was another NIH study with 61 patients, the majority of them that suffered multiple organ dysfunction, septic shock, acute kidney injury, and hypotension, which are all very serious health problems. And that, too, there was a five-day study with 71 reported adverse events and 21% of those serious. And then there was a 10-day study in that was NIH-funded. That 10-day study, there was 74% of patients suffered adverse effects, which 35.
you know, I, just to put a different spin on this, is that the NIH and the FDA have clearly known that the remdesivir is a has a horrible safety profile and its efficacy is extremely poor. The research is just overwhelmingly poised in that direction. So I think one of the important lessons that sinks into my frontal cortex in any case is that, and this concerns the vaccines, what we're being told about vaccines as well, is that safety and efficacy doesn't really matter any longer in so much medicine. It just simply doesn't. It doesn't fit into that dominant mindset that has kind of now become the norm in medicine and health being being politicized and financialized for other strategic motivations. And I think remdesivir is a very good example of this. The other thing we've noticed, and let's put remdesivir and the vaccines. Just this week, we heard that Pfizer has now made out the report, you know, that their vaccine is going to be fine for kids, although no data is forthcoming. And this is, we've witnessed this in the last year and a half, this unusual new reporting habit, I find, of medical reports rising before they're peer reviewed, before they're even published. It's just based on press releases. And in the past, and having worked in biotech, you'd put out press releases all the time, but that never got beyond, you know, the investors in the pharmaceutical industry. And we never reached mainstream media until there was an actual a report published in a journal or medical journal or publication. But now we're just finding this almost like a epidemic of studies being reported before data is provided. And this is what Anthony Fauci did when he was heading Trump's coronavirus task force, and in May 2020 made these declarations of remdesivir's efficacy and safety before there was any data available. He failed to disclose. It was a promotional pronouncement that he had made. And what we do know from those studies, which were based when he made those to the mainstream media in the White House, was that they were already in the process of changing the primary outcomes of that study. And this is a very dubious and suspicious practice when what are called primary outcomes. So these are the measures, the metrics that are used to determine the success or failure of a drug or a vaccine or whatever you're doing. And this was picked up, but the mainstream, only Reuters really picked up on it, that there was a doctor at Cleveland Clinic, Stephen Neeson, who was a chief academic officer at Cleveland Clinic and then a director and founder of the Scripps Research Institute in California. They noted this, and they were very unimpressed by the remdesivir's tentative and what benefits and efficacy that they were showing. Only Reuters reported on that. So that's, I just wanted to make those statements.
Okay, thank you. So we're bringing you the facts, and you start putting the pieces together. It's all about profiteering. It's all about controlling the narrative. It's about controlling the science by the one person who controls everything. And now he's been caught lying. He's been funding gain-of-function research with his associates and friends and then trying to cover it up. And yet the media has given him a pass and tried to protect him. Think of all the lives that could have been saved if we listened to the frontline doctors who saw that they could prevent people from going to hospital if they used a combination of different FDA-approved medications, repurposed medications, that were off patent, and therefore inexpensive, but then down comes the heavy hammer, and the media is quickly to follow. Shame on the media, shame on the government, shame on the scientific community has not challenged this. I'm Gary Knoll. Thank you for listening, and have a nice day.